All right, we're ready for Joshua 20 through 24, lesson 7. This has to do with the cities of the inheritance for the Levites, which includes the cities of refuge. We find that in Joshua, the 20th chapter, verse 1 through 9. This is something that they were told that they would be having to do when they get into the land. And the next thing to do was to select the cities of refuge for the people on the west side of Jordan. Cities on the other side have already been selected. We'll go over that in just a minute. These cities were to be to provide a temporary haven for anyone involved in killing someone where there was a question about how the killing was done. Okay, if it was an accident, that kind of thing. Then these cities were for that purpose, and we'll get into that in just a minute. Even a murderer could actually flee and be spared from the avenger of blood temporarily. He got to the city, Deuteronomy 19, and he told his story, and whether they did a trial or not, or if he was guilty, they thought he was guilty, then they'd turn him over to the avenger of blood. In verse 1 of Joshua 20, the Lord spake to Joshua, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel, saying, appoint out for you cities of refuge, whereof I spake unto you by the hand of Moses, that the slayer that killeth any person unawares and unwittingly may flee thither, and they shall be your refuge from the avenger of blood." This is what the person had to do now when... if he had accidentally killed someone when he reached the gates of the city. We find that in verse 4. "And when he that doth flee unto one of these cities shall stand at the entering of the gate of the city, and shall declare his cause in the ears of the elders of the city, and they shall take him into the city to them and give him a place that he may dwell." That was their responsibility. When he got to the gate of the city and told them what happened, then that was their responsibility to keep the avenger from blood from coming into the city to harm this person. The avenger of blood would be the nearest of kin to the person who had been killed. But this was a place of safety only until the trial could be held in the particular city. If the person was found guilty, then he would be turned over to the avenger of blood. And that would be the nearest kin. He'd be turned over to him and he would slay him at that point. If the killing was found to be an accident, then he would have to stay in the city of refuge until the death of the high priest. We find that in Numbers 35, 9 through 34 tells about that. But he had to stay in that city until the high priest died. And then after that, he could go back home. So how long would a high priest live? It could be a long time. Okay? It could be, 50 years? Could be. Don't know. Just depends on how long you live, you know. The cities on the west side were Kadesh, Shechem, and Hebron. Of course, you know, Kadesh is way up the top. Shechem was in the middle. You remember between the mountains that I showed you the picture of last week? Between which two mountains? Gerizim and Ebal. Boy, y'all are quiet tonight. All right, and the other city on this side is Hebron. And you can see they're kind of spaced out to where if a person accidentally hurt someone, they could go to this city or go to that city. Or if they was in here and hurt someone, they could go to either one of those cities to stay there. And they would be protected from them. Kadesh was in the hill country of Naphtali. Shechem, of course, in the hill country of Ephraim. And Hebron is in the hill country of Judah. All right? So, the cities of refuge on the east side of Jordan were Golan, Ramoth Gilead, and Bezer. The cities on the east side were set aside by Moses before he died. That was in Deuteronomy 4, 41 through 43. Moses set those cities up before he died because he was still alive when they got that inheritance on the east side of Jordan. With cities on both sides, there was one within reach of any Israelite or foreigner living in Israel who accidentally killed someone and needed to flee for protection. We find that Deuteronomy 19, verse 6. These cities were part of the Levite inheritance. We find that in Numbers 35 and also Deuteronomy 19. Well, why was this part of it? What did this have to do with their inheritance? I mean, these are just cities. What else did these Levites get? I know they got other cities, but I'm trying to think, what else did they get besides cities? What else did the Levites get? Oh, they got the sacrifices, yeah, that's right. That's how they sustained their living a lot of times. Of course, they had cattle as well, that's right. Very good. All right, the ones on the east side was Golan, Ramoth-Gilead, and Bezer. These are a little bit further apart, you know, right here, but that's all right. But Golan was in Bashan, in the half-tribe of Manasseh in the north, and Ramoth-Gilead is in Gad, the area, and then Bezer's in the plains of Reuben. All the tribes now had their land. It's all been given to them. Given out. The heads of the tribe, the Levi, came to Eleazar and Joshua. They were at Shiloh. Remember where Shiloh is? Tell me where Shiloh is. Don't all raise your hands at the same time. Sorry. Think about it. Where is Shiloh? You need to kind of get somebody kind of in your mind where Shiloh is. Approximately? Central part on the west side. Okay, that's close enough for right now. Okay. All right, they came to him saying, "The Lord commanded Moses to give us cities to live in and the fields around them." The Lord said that they would get 48 different cities. And the Levites were not given a normal portion because of their inheritance. We find that in Joshua 13, 14 and 14 verse 4, where their inheritance was from the sacrifices, like Charles was saying a while ago. About 1,500 feet on each side of the city was given to the Levites for fields and to work and for their cattle, those kind of things. This did not include the cities themselves, just the surrounding area. Numbers 35, 1 through 5 tells us about that. This is the Kohathites. These were the Levites from Kohath. They had 13 cities, and they are coming out of in these particular tribes of Simeon, Judah, and Benjamin. And the cities that we have listed is Hebron, Libna, Debir, Beth Shemesh, Gibeon, Geba, and Anathoth. Hebron, if you remember, was for the priests, but the surrounding villages and fields belonged to Caleb. Do you remember why? Remember why, Brent? No, that's not it. He asked for it himself. And why? That's where he had spied out the land, and it was given to him for that reason. That's right. Very good. The remainder of Kohath, who were not priests, received 10 other cities. They were found in Ephraim, Dan, and the half-tribe of Manasseh on the west side of Jordan. Those cities were Shechem, Gezer, Beth-Oron, El-Tekah, Gibbethon, Aijalon, and Theanak. Guessing those pronounced correctly. If it's not, all right, y'all pronounce it correctly. These were all in the central portion of the land. Cities of the Gershonites in Joshua 21:6 and 27:33, they received 13 cities as well. They came out of Issachar, Asher, Naphtali, half-tribe of Manasseh over in Bashan. The only cities that are well known to these would be Golan, which is in Bashan, and Kedesh, which would be in Naphtali. See? Of course, you know, Golan is on the east side in the half-tribe of Manasseh. And Kedesh is on the west side in Naphtali. Now, the Merarites, received 12 cities in Reuben, Gad, and Zebulun. I'm hoping that you will be able to put a picture in your mind of where these different places are. You need to kind of get an idea of where these different tribes are actually located. It'll help you out tremendously in teaching. Better known cities of these would be Jokneam, Bezer, Ramoth-Gilead, Mahanaim, and Heshbon. Summary of the Levites, cities of the Levites, you find that in Joshua 21, 41, 42. And Levites received a total of 48 cities, which include the cities of refuge and the fields around them. You can see here the number of cities that's involved in just for the Levites. 48 cities is a lot of cities, if you think about it, and the fields surrounding. Now, that's quite a bit of territory. These are the tribes: Simeon, Judah, Benjamin, Dan, Ephraim, half-tribe Manasseh here, Issachar, Zebulun, Naphtali, and Asher. The other half of Manasseh, Gad, and Reuben. Kind of get those fixed in your mind so you can, as you teach this and study this, and you kind of get an idea of where these different cities are located. That'll help you tremendously. Okay, so now it comes time for the Transjordanic tribes to return home. Joshua 22, 1 through 34. Joshua calls these men in from the east side of Jordan to him. He tells them, "You have kept everything Moses commanded you." Hey, that was great that they had done exactly what Moses, they had agreed with Moses what they would do when they went over to fight. And he said, "You have followed all of my orders." That's what Joshua's telling them. "Just like you followed Moses, you followed me. You not abandoned your brothers in war. You've been right there with them. Yeah, you didn't give up, take off running. And it's time for you to go back to your land, to your families, the land that Moses had given you on the east side of Jordan." Okay? "Hold fast," Joshua tells them, "to what the Lord, to the Lord, and serve Him with all your heart and all your soul." Very important things that Joshua is telling them, to be firm for the Lord. "Bless them," he sent them away, back to the other side. These men were returning home with much wealth from spoils of war, such as silver, gold, livestock, clothes, bronze, iron. Where would they get all these things? From the cities where they had conquered, okay? And even if they were not conquering cities, a lot of times men who went to war carried a lot of their goods with them. They were just going to fight. A lot of times they would take gold and silver and those kind of things, and sometimes they would have their horses decorated and those kind of things with a lot of gold and silver. So when they lost in the battle, whoever killed them or beat them, whatever it came to, they got those all those goods. So you could walk away from a war a wealthy man. I mean a very wealthy person. They carried most all of their really treasured items with them. A lot of times they did. Joshua instructed these men on the east side. Now you remember, there's more men than just y'all over there on the east side. There was only like 40,000 who came over to help fight. And there was a lot more that stayed than actually came over there. But he says, "You go back and you share with your brothers some of this wealth that you got from the spoils of war." Because they stayed behind. And what was their reason for staying behind? Yeah, they had to take care of those families over there. In case someone came in from another nation and tried to wipe them out. So, remember them, Joshua tells them. That's in Numbers 32:16 through 27. So the fighting men of Reuben, Gad, and half-tribe Manasseh left Shiloh and returned to the land of Gilead to their possession. There was about 40,000 of the soldiers, the Transjordanic tribes that crossed the Jordan to fight, and find that Joshua 4:12 and 13, number of men who had gone over. Reuben, Gad together had over 80,000 men of war. We find that in Numbers 26. Manasseh had about 25,000. Who went shouldn't have been on there, I don't think. So about 60 to 65,000 men did not go to help take the promised land. They stayed on the east side of Jordan. Okay? So there were several people who stayed over there. Those men stayed to protect the families and didn't have the opportunity to gain the wealth like those who were in the war. So they came to the Jordan River, and men that was going back across decided, we're going to build an altar. What's the problem with building an altar,
Jimmy?
Okay, that's exactly what was thought. And they thought they were going to do that. But the tribes on the west side heard that they were building this altar. And so they went and reported it to Joshua. They're building an altar over there. And you know where they're supposed to go to worship? Where? Where? Say again. Shiloh. Very good. Yeah, it's not Jerusalem yet, because it hadn't been taken. That's right. All right, very good. Shiloh. And that's where the tabernacle was at this particular time. Many of the men of war on the west side gathered together at Shiloh, and they were going to war against all those men on the east side, because they heard they're building an altar, and they're going against what God said. So we're going to just wipe them out. So before going to war with them, they decided, we'll send Phinehas, son of Eleazar, the high priest, okay, and 10 of the princes of tribes on the west side. We'll find out about this altar thing, okay, up front. Well, we don't know for sure where that altar was actually put. May have been just across the Jordan. Don't know for sure, but I'm suspecting that it was. But they had left Shiloh to make their way over to Gilead. Not sure that's the track either. But it's anyway, they went over there, and either just before they crossed or just after they crossed, I don't know that it makes it clear. That's where they put that altar. And I'm suspecting that it was on the east side, because the people on the west, I mean, they just went over there and tore the thing down. You know, that was it. So, as Phinehas got there, he went over and talked to him, and he says, what do you mean by building an altar? This is outrageous. This is totally against what God has taught, and Moses has taught us. You can't do this. Don't you remember the trespass at Peor? Remember, trespass at Peor. Just raise your hand if you know it. That's in Numbers 35. Okay? Let's look at Numbers 35 and see what happened over there. Maybe it was, I cut 25, I may have missed it. 25? Okay, I thought that was right, but I could have missed it. All right, in Numbers 25, we look at, what happened there. All right, look at verse 5. Read 5 through 9 for us. Kevin, you want to read that for us? 5 through 9, yes, please. All right, what had actually happened here? Israel had done what? Charles? Okay. All right. Now, the significant thing was, Balaam had tried to do what to Israel? Tried to curse them. And God wouldn't let him. And so he told Balak, here's what you do. Okay. And as he tells him, you send these Midianite women and from Moab over here, and these men will be with them, they'll commit whoredom with them and those kind of things, and you won't have to worry. Israel will be done for. And that's what Phinehas is bringing out right here. And these people had not soon forgotten this. They remembered it well, what had taken place back in that time. And Joshua goes on, or Phinehas goes on to say, you know, we're not even cleansed from that transgression even today. And so how long had it been? You know, it's been several years since that happened. That goes way back, a good long ways. at probably 5, 6, 7 years at least, maybe more. Today you rebel against Jehovah, and tomorrow His wrath will be upon all Israel. And he knew that because of some other things that happened. If the land is unclean for you over there on the east side, do what? Come on over to the west side. We'll give you, get to take part of this land over here. You know, that was the original intent anyway, wasn't it? For everybody to be on the west side? Yeah, that was what was promised. But don't do this thing, okay? Remember the sin of Achan? What he did and how all Israel suffered from the wrath of God? Don't y'all remember that? Boy, Phinehas was getting right with him. He hadn't given these people a moment to say anything. He was just chewing them out, you know, from top to bottom. Then finally they got an opportunity to speak. They said, the mighty God, Jehovah, He knows why we did this. He knows exactly why we built this altar. And He says, if this is a rebellion that we built an altar, then let God exact the penalty against us. Let Him go ahead and punish us right now. If we built this for contentious purposes, you know, God will take care of it. And in time to come, they went on to tell Phinehas and these other men, that your descendants may say to our descendants, you have nothing to do with Jehovah. Y'all are over across the Jordan. Y'all don't have anything to do with Jehovah, God of Israel. You are no part of Israel and not of the promised land. That's not even part of the promised land. Well, that kind of started hitting home with Phinehas and these others. So they said, we thought we would build an altar, not for burnt offerings, but as a witness between us from now on. Do you think of anything that's even happening over in that region today that has to do with borders? They are still fighting over borders today. Somebody says, we were given this land. The other says, oh no, that's our land. It's still going on today. Well, they went on to tell Phinehas, if question arises, then our children can say that this altar is built after the pattern of the Lord's altar to be a witness that we do have a part in worship of God. It was an important thing to them that later down the road that their children would be able to say, yes, we are a part of God's people as well. To rebel against God was not in our minds at all when we built this altar. That was the farthest thing from our mind. So when Phinehas and the princes heard the response from these men, they were very happy, they were pleased. And actually they said, today we know that Jehovah is our midst because you have not sinned against Jehovah by doing this deed for the right purpose. You've delivered our hand from the Lord. If they'd gone over there all heated up for battle and killed all them people, Jehovah wouldn't have been happy with them either. So they returned back to the west side, delivered the report, and all were pleased. Monument was called Ed, which means witness. God made a promise to Abraham, Genesis 7:12. What was it? No, excuse me, go ahead.
Well, I was on Romans chapter 13. God gives instruction telling them
that. They kind of followed.
God's plan exactly.
Right, very good. It's a good point. That was in Deuteronomy 13. Okay, good point. But God made a promise to Abraham, and the promise was that He would give the land to Abraham's descendants. We've said that and studied that all the way back through Genesis. God gave to Israel all the land which He swore to give their fathers. We find that in Joshua 21 and verse 43. They now have possessed the land and dwelt in it. God gave them rest from their warfare. Kind of settled down now. They're getting settled into the land. And there was not a man of all their enemies stand against them. Well, that's saying a whole lot. When you go in and fight, nobody could stand up against them. Couldn't make any inroads at all. Joshua 21 and verse 45, there failed not aught of any good thing which the Lord had spoken unto the house of Israel. All came to pass. What does that do away with today? Anything? Anything come to mind? There is not another land to be fulfilled. This is it. God fulfilled it. You know, you have people today saying, you know, about their land, but it's fulfilled. God did it, and it tells you that in Joshua 21:45. That promise to Abraham and his descendants is fulfilled. All came to pass. See that in Numbers 31, Deuteronomy 19. After a long time, when Jehovah had given Israel rest from enemies, Joshua called the leaders in to him, and he said, I'm old, advanced in years, and you've seen all that Jehovah has done to your enemies. You've seen everything. And he fought for you. He gave you the land. You didn't have to do that much. Each of the tribes have their inheritance. Some of the land has got to be conquered yet. So you've got to finish your task and drive out those who are other nations. You've still got to drive them out. Don't forget that. That's what Joshua's telling them. Some of those people are still here. Okay? So you still got to drive them out. Must be courageous and do all that God has spoken in the law. That's very important. You keep the law. Not turn aside from it at all. Well, that just hits us today, right down the line. You know, preach that sermon today, can't you? Don't turn aside from what God says. Not to the right or to the left. Stay right on what God says. And if, you know, people would do that today, there wouldn't be a question about religion. There wouldn't be but one. They don't do that. Do not go among these nations or have anything to do with them or their gods. It's very important that you stay away. God has driven out strong nations before you. He'll continue to help you if, the word if you follow Him, love Him above all else. Let Him be your God. You be His people. You won't have to worry. He'll take care of you. He'll give you those things. Do not intermarry. Very important. With those nations. Why? They'll pull you away into serving other gods. That's how important it was that you don't intermarry with those people, those other nations. And if you do, Jehovah's no longer going to drive out your enemies. These people that's here, Jehovah's going to leave them. They'll be a thorn in your side. They'll be a problem the rest of your lives. These nations will become a snare to you until you have perished off this land. Did that happen? They lost that land. Syrians came in. The Babylonians came in. Took that land. Took them away into captivity. Yes. Because they did exactly what Joshua told them not to. Joshua said, I am today going the way of all the earth. He's ready to die. He knew he was getting close. Not one thing has failed to come to pass that God has promised. That is a very important thing that's said in the Scripture. Not one thing has failed. Even evil will come upon you if you forsake the Lord and serve other gods. Your ancestors lived beyond the river Euphrates. Where is the Euphrates? Anybody remember? All right. Just real quick. I'm going to use Master's car here. Euphrates north, south, east. Over here? Up? It's actually come down this way, doesn't it? And the Tigris also. Tigris on the other side. I drew the Tigris first. I'm sorry. Okay. That's the Tigris and the Euphrates. But that's where their ancestors came from, beyond the river. What did they do there? They worshipped idols. How do we know that? Did anybody bring idols from there that we know of? Yeah. Rachel did. Who was Rachel? Jacob's wife. Yeah. She came back with idols. That's exactly right. She stole them from her father when Jacob bringing her back. But they served other gods. God called Abraham and brought him to the land of Canaan. He multiplied his descendants on this land. He also gave Esau possession. Where was it? Land of Edom. Okay, Edom is for Esau. Okay, Jacob and his family went down into Egypt. Why? To live. They went down there because of the famine. That's right. God brought them up after many years. How many years? About 430 years, give or take. Okay. Very good. Came to the Red Sea on your way out, and the Lord opened it. You crossed on dry land, Joshua tells them. God destroyed the Egyptians as they crossed. You've seen what He did in Egypt, and for you, as you dwelt in the wilderness, you remember their clothes didn't wear out, their shoes didn't wear out, all those kind of things. He fed them, what? Manna, and gave them what to eat for meat? Quail. Okay, very good. He brought you to the land of the Amorites, fought them, He delivered them into your hands. That would be Sihon and Og and those particular ones over that way. Balak rose up and fought you using Balaam, the son of Beor, to curse you, but God would not listen to him. He would not curse you, but blessed you. God blessed you instead of cursing you. Crossed over the Jordan, you came to Jericho, and you saw the hand of Jehovah deliver them into your hand. They have to work hard for that, for Jericho? No, just walked around it. Blew the trumpets, shouted, down came the wall. Jehovah has given the land of Canaan into your hands as an inheritance. Gave you land that you have not worked, cities that you didn't build, vineyards and olive yards that you didn't plant. God's given you all of this. Now, therefore, fear the Lord, serve Him sincerely and genuinely. Turn away from the gods which your father served in Mesopotamia. Those in Egypt, serve Jehovah. You make the choice whom you will serve. The gods of your ancestors are in the land where you are now or of the Amorites. You make the choice. But He said, for me and my house, we're going to serve Jehovah. A very powerful statement that Joshua makes right near the end of his life. People answered, it would be unthinkable to us to serve any other god, because it was Jehovah who brought us here. Good statement by them. And you cannot serve the Lord because He is a jealous God and He will not put up with your transgressions. Joshua tells you, He's not going to put up if you transgress. He will not put up with it. If you forsake Him to follow other gods, He'll destroy you. Can't get any plainer than that. He's going to destroy you. Their reply was, we will serve the Lord. And so, put away your foreign gods and serve Him. You mean they still had foreign gods? Yes, they did. So they made a covenant. Joshua made a covenant with the people right this time that they would serve God. Okay? Just about through. Joshua died at the age of 110. They buried him in Timnath-Serah in the hill country of Ephraim. Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders of Joshua, that had known the mighty works Joshua did for Israel. Here we remember what Joseph had requested, that they bury his bones, and they did that. They buried him in Shechem, and a parcel of ground that Jacob had bought from the sons of Hamor for 100 pieces of money. That would be in that particular region right in here, where Joseph, somewhere in that area, where Joseph was buried, bones were buried. Eleazar, the son of Aaron, dies. They buried him in the hill of Phinehas. This was in the hill country of Ephraim. Okay, very good. Appreciate your comments and thoughts tonight. That'll be it for tonight. Bye.